What's up, guys? I'm Nobody Special, and I have Bob Coleman is with me today because we have a lot to talk about in the gold and silver space. Metals have had one hell of a run to start this year. It's really been going on about a year and a half now. And the big question is, where do we go from here? What's going on with silver, with gold, with platinum, with mining companies? What about those ratios? Bob is going to help us to decipher what the charts are telling us, as well as bless us with the inner workings and his knowledge of the industry. Bob, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing today?
Good, Jack. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and it's always great to have you here. Here we are. It's, a little before 5 p.m. on Wednesday. The Fed just wrapped up. Metals had a rough day. Go figure. I schedule an interview with Bob because metals are doing great, and then they take a dump right before we do the interview. Let's just start with your overall take on the state of the metals market, because you work in that. What are you seeing? Has the supply-demand dynamics or the buyer enthusiasm changed in these last few weeks?
Yeah, I think post-Labor Day, you've seen a pickup in retail activity. And it's not with every product. It's very specific, maybe Gold Eagles or other gold products, maybe a Silver Eagle, something like that. For example, Constitutional Money or Junk Silver, which is pre-64 dimes and quarters, you've just seen consistent selling. So you do see the public selling into this market, but I think you also have higher net worth individuals that are saying, as these prices are rising and, they've been maybe watching it all summer long, they're back in, from vacation, and they're like, okay, maybe I should be dipping my toe into the water a little bit here. I don't want to miss out on the price move, whatever it may be, or, just geopolitical tensions and all this sort of the frenzy that you kind of see in the media and some of these unfortunate events that have transpired the last few weeks. All that tends to take a toll on trust and accountability and so forth. And I think the metals have been a nice place for people to say, hey, listen, I don't know where to go, but at least, gold's not going to go to zero, so I can put some money there.
So if I'm hearing you right, and what you let off there matches what I've been observing, still great deals to be had on physical silver, in particular the Constitutional or the junk silver. You can still find that below spot in a lot of places. But I have noticed gold premiums starting to tick up a little slowly, maybe not blowing out, but certainly you don't have the great deals we had just a couple of weeks ago. So you're starting to see, maybe if I'm paraphrasing you correctly, some of that retail buyer enthusiasm is starting to trickle into gold. Still not so much silver, though.
Yeah, I mean, silver in that, gold has been staying at this 3,600 level for a little bit of time here. And so you've seen, people will sell on, like, for example, every $100 higher on gold, you get a wave of selling. And then as it plateaus at that price, the selling kind of dissipates. And then you get the buyers that are saying, well, I guess it's not going right down. And I'm afraid that it's going to go to 4,000 before I pull the trigger. So then you get the buyers that kind of come in that are afraid to miss the move. Silver is just one of those things that, it's continually ratcheting higher, and you get that continual sort of every dollar higher. Someone out there who bought 10 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it may be, and they're either up on their money or maybe break even from purchases back in 2011, they're basically saying, hey, listen, it's been a great ride, or I need the funds, or I'm going to put into something else. And so you do get sort of retail still kind of selling back into the market. And that's really, that's been sort of really with the metals all year.
So would it be accurate to describe this move in gold as maybe the early innings of a little bit of even FOMO going on? You mentioned people being afraid to wait until 4,000. That's starting to sound a little like FOMO to me.
Yeah, and if you look at the bank reports, the research desks coming out, Goldman Sachs saying, Bank of America, 4,500, 5,000, I think Goldman Sachs came out and said, if the Fed, people lose confidence in the Fed, you could see gold at $5,000 an ounce. Those are the types of things that I think are drawing maybe the mainstream into the market? No, not necessarily the gold bug or silver bug buyer, but more the guy that says, hey, listen, I listened to my financial advisor and now he's saying that, you know, this is what his firm is saying. You know, maybe they put a little bit more credence into that research report rather than, you know, the guy that's, you know, on a podcast and on YouTube, for example. So that is bringing, I think, maybe more institutional money into the market. And you see that also with a lot of these big macroeconomic names out there, like a Ray Dalio or someone like that, that has, you know, come out and said, listen, you should have 10 or 15% of your money into gold or whatever it may be. You know, people take that to heart. And so that also attracts more money. And of course, as the price rises, price attracts more money. And then, you know, that lifts prices even higher. So you get that momentum type of swing that kind of goes into the market as well.
Yeah, I even saw a headline right before we started recording here, you know, right as I was coming in, I saw a headline that Jeff Gundlach is saying even a 25% allocation to gold would not be excessive in this environment. You know, Jeff Gundlach, his bread and butter is bonds. So what he's really saying there is maybe with some of the developments at the Fed, we're expecting real yields in the bond market to be probably negative for the foreseeable future as the Fed moves dovish into blowout deficits, which would mean gold is now more attractive as a safe haven investment in that scenario.
Yeah, and just to clarify, when people say, well, what does he mean, you know, by the bond market? Because he is a big bond guy. You know, gold is looked at for some people in the macro world as a zero coupon bond. It doesn't pay interest like a zero coupon bond does. But typically in a declining interest rate environment, where, like you said, with real yields going down, gold kind of acts as that zero coupon bond leverage type of thing with a perpetual maturity. So that's, I think, what has inspired, I think, maybe a lot of followers of his work to look at gold.
So we talked a lot about gold. I want to ask you, I want to drill down on silver a little bit because, you know, you've been very vocal in recent days, catching a lot of flack from some people on certain sides of an argument about price manipulation. I don't want to talk so much about the manipulation as I want to talk about the security of supply and whether or not we're in a silver shortage, because that's another issue that kind of goes along with the manipulation narrative, is that the world is running out of silver. And I've noticed we have two different silver markets. We've got the physical silver market where it seems like there is just more than enough. But then on paper, I've noticed some of your tweets recently. You've been drawing attention to things like the cost to borrow SLV shares. That's the SLV ETF. Historically, the cost to borrow shares has been about 0.5%. Recently, it's gone up to about 1.55%. So more people are borrowing shares of this silver ETF either to short it or for whatever mechanical reason they need that exposure. And you've also drawn a lot of attention to the silver lease rates in London, which I saw blew out as high as 5% recently. And that's historically been like nothing percent, right? I mean, like a fraction of a tenth of a percent to lease silver in London. So when you see that blow out to 5%, that does look a little bit like a shortage is developing, but then you contrast that with the situation going on with the dealers and all the inventory. So how do you rectify these two scenarios? What's playing out here?
Yeah, you kind of have to break this down a little bit. With these SLV shares, for example, today you had zero shares available to borrow all day. I mean, it didn't update since 8:30 this morning, or maybe there was a snafu in getting that read. But I think part of the issue is you have a number of things that are happening with the financial markets, and you have equity market makers now getting involved using shares of SLV, for example, as a spot deferred contract or as a derivative equivalent to the physical from a pricing mechanism standpoint. But the options market is also taking on a life of its own. I mean, it's just absolutely grown, not just in the metals markets, but in the general market overall. I mean, you have like $1 trillion of notional value of options that are set to expire. And that's almost now almost every single month. I mean, it's just enormous. So when you have this type of situation that starts to unfold, for example, let's just say you're a market maker for the options market. You have a lot of the retail public that are, they see the price of silver going up and they want to buy calls. And it's a market maker that sells them those calls. And then what happens is the market maker now is short calls. So they have, for example, risk that if the price goes up, those calls are going to go up in value as well. So what they do is they hedge by buying the underlying investment, which in this case would be SLV shares. But they don't buy the shares on a one-to-one basis because a lot of times, 90% of the time, those calls will expire worthless. So they are monitoring the calls that they're short. And as the price goes up, it's kind of like this reflexivity type of situation where all of a sudden the price really starts rising. They got to buy a lot more stock. Or if the stock isn't available or that's actually adding to the price pressure to the upside, what they typically would have to do is they'd have to get silver. For example, the authorized participants would have to get silver, deliver the silver to the SLV, create shares, and then from those shares, the market makers can actually obtain the shares that way. So, but what happens ultimately is those 1,000-ounce bars that are needed can create these periods of tightness, very short periods of tightness that creates this pricing, where it gets out of whack very, on a very temporary basis. And you see a lot of share creation. I've been noticing this, a lot of share creation around the option expiration time period in the last few months. So you're getting a lot of influence in the market by areas of the market that maybe a year or two ago weren't really prevalent. People look at the futures markets and they say, okay, well, we look at managed money, what are they doing versus the commercials and so forth. And that's just another area of the market. But that has to go with the exchange for physical spread when you look at the futures market relative to the spot markets. But the options markets, they may affect a lot of these equities where the market maker is using the equity now because the lease rates went up, earlier this year, for example, lease rates went up substantially, and the cost of carrying that physical metal made it maybe non-profitable to actually deal with the physical itself. So they go to some type of spot or spot deferred contract, which could have been these equity shares, for example. So hopefully that makes a little bit of sense of how the changing and dynamics of these markets are evolving as product creation is coming to the market. Structured products. You have to also remember banks. People that watch the movie The Big Short, where the guy goes to Goldman Sachs and says, "I want to short the housing market. Write me a contract for that." Well, what happens is in the options world or at least some of these structured product worlds, the Wall Street banks will write an option type contract that says, okay, if you want 80% of the upside and you want no downside risk in the market, we'll sell you a product with that exact feature to it. And it's basically an option type of contract. So it's a very profitable product that Wall Street will write, but it meets some of the demands of the institution that's wanting that product.
So is there a cause and effect here? Is it the higher lease rates in London are driving some of these market participants to say, I'd rather hedge by borrowing the SLV shares? And then that's driving the SLV price higher. And I'm just going to play this out in a loop, right? Drives the SLV price higher. Now you've got maybe a premium to net asset value in the SLV ETF, so that leads to more share creation. But don't they have to go buy the silver to offset those shares, assuming they're not just creating the shares and not buying the silver, as some might probably claim in the comments? But then if they go out and buy that silver, well, that adds to more scarcity in the London vaults, which is what drove that lease rate to go higher to begin with. So it somewhat resembles a gamma squeeze here in the options market with what's playing out. So are you seeing the momentum in these mechanics? Is this a situation that has only recently developed in the last few weeks, or is this something that's accelerating to the upside as prices move?
This year, I've noticed it where it's more prevalent, more than any other year. And some of that may have been because of the EFP and this need for, earlier this year with tariffs on precious metals and so forth, scared a lot of people into, like, for example, the banks went out and bought a lot of gold and silver, delivered it to the COMEX, wrote contracts against that physical metal, and locked in a very nice arbitrage, meaning that the price, selling the futures price at a higher price than what the spot price actually was, that spread. They made, was it $500 million in the first quarter of this year doing that. And what that's where this manipulation argument that the banks are the ones suppressing the price. Well, they were actually one of the biggest buyers of metals in the first quarter. So some of this stuff doesn't hold argument when you start to get into more of the minutiae of, who's buying and selling and that type of thing. In fact, actually, you can make a very strong case that when you have these very wealthy investors come in, maybe one-off investors or institutions that want to go into the physical market and buy the physical product, what's happening there is they may go to a dealer or some type of supplier, and that supplier or dealer is going to sort of broadcast that order out to its suppliers or to bullion banks or to a refiner, for example. And all of a sudden, very quickly, someone knows that, okay, this guy is wanting to buy a lot of metal. And all of a sudden, the premium on that 1,000-ounce silver bar goes from, 30 cents to 80 cents overnight. Because what people don't understand is how the industry operates is when someone comes in to buy a large amount of metal, the industry has to hedge that transaction and go into the futures market and buy those futures contracts as a form of a hedge, because they're selling that metal to this individual. So, and so now they're short, for example, or maybe they're just unwinding the futures contract that they've already had in place for that existing inventory. But that's how the mechanics work, and that's where this EFP, which I've noticed really since the fourth quarter of 2023, when you get some of these very, very large wealthy investors coming into the market, they actually are potentially creating this EFP dislocation as well. And I wrote a post on that, and it's one of the reasons why. I try and talk to, high net worth individuals, ultra high net worth individuals, trying to explain to them the best way to get involved in, for example, the metals markets without getting taken advantage of.
So let's talk about that EFP for a minute. That which stands, by the way, folks, that stands for Exchange for Physical, which is basically the difference between the New York COMEX futures price and the London spot price. So we did see that Exchange for Physical premium blew out earlier this month. And by blew out, it went up to like close to 80 cents. Now we're back down around 35. And that increase in the EFP premium coincided with the U.S. Geological Survey adding silver to its list of critical minerals for the 2025 or 2026 critical minerals list. And it seems like that maybe not quite like an April level of hysteria, but to a certain degree, it reignited some of that tariff concerns around silver imports and maybe some policy decisions around this critical minerals list. Why would adding silver to the critical minerals list have caused a change like that? Like what shifts in the market when that happens?
Yeah, and just for clarification, it's right now it's on a draft phase, so it's like a 30-day period. But most of the time, you can almost guarantee that whatever is on the draft is going to be passed through to the end document. And this is something that I've talked about before. In the United States, from an industry perspective, we import about 330 million ounces of silver a year. For just fabrication and industrial demand. That has nothing to do with investment bars and coins. That's just simply strict investment or industrial demand for making industrial products. And a lot of that comes from Mexico and Canada. So what happens is with this critical metals or metals list is that if those countries that are big suppliers to us, for example, start to maybe deviate with their supply and sending that supply elsewhere, or you these trade wars start to develop and so forth, there's a risk that, you know, reaction from our government is to hit that country with you know, some type of tariff, you know, just across the board, you know, and try to dissuade them from maybe not sending critical needed product or materials to us, and sending it someplace else. So that's something that all of a sudden people start to realize, well, wait a second, if and Mexico, for example, if you just saw that they started to put tariffs on China, and some trade restrictions on China, and that probably had to deal with some of the pressure that the U.S. was putting on them. But these are events that the market looks at that says, okay, wait a second, if silver is that potentially tight on a supply basis, all of a sudden there's a new pricing risk to silver, meaning the price could start to rally really hard, because there's a lot of above ground supply. I mean, it's not that we're going to see a shortage of silver. There's, you know, 6 billion ounces of silver above ground that, you know, it's just a matter of the price that says, okay, I'm willing to let go of the silver. You know, if it hits $100 an ounce or $50 an ounce, investors will start to let go of that bullion and put it back into the market. But until then, you know, the industry has to say, well, listen, if I need to obtain this stuff, it's going to cost me. And if I panic and start buying a lot of it, it could start to throw some of these pricing mechanisms out of whack. And so when that came on to the list, that exchange for physical, people that were short product against their maybe silver that's on the COMEX, all of a sudden, you know, they may have panicked and trying to cover some of that or hedge some of that short position. Because you know what's been happening this year is this exchange for physical spread, when it gets out of whack, it's not that futures and the spot price go up one-to-one relationship, it's that one of them goes up on an accelerated fashion more than the other. And that's where this, when you say a blowout in exchange for physical to the upside, that's where the futures market goes up at an accelerated fashion relative to the actual physical inventory you know, maybe in New York or in London, that type of thing.
That exchange for physical premium, I like to imagine that as a spring, right? You've got two sides of a spring, and if they move apart, they're exerting a tension on each other, right? One is pulling on the other. It could break in either direction. Could that exchange for physical spread blowing out be partially responsible for some of the Mr. Slammy events that we see at New York Open, right? You know, 9 o'clock comes around, we see the price take a dive, and a lot of people say that's manipulation. Could that just be metal that was bought overnight in London being sold into New York to collect on that EFP premium?
Yeah,
and that's definitely why you see the price fall in the morning?
Yeah, it could be that. It could just be simple hedging, because a lot of times these price movements were happening near the time of the fixes. So yes, you're right. It could just be a coincidence of some of that. Because in New York, that's the New York market or futures market is known as the hedging portion of the leg of you know, of the industry. So there's a lot more liquidity in the futures markets during daytime trading hours, and so when you have someone take a big position in London, for example, they may go to the New York to sell an equivalent amount of futures against however many, you know, physical ounces that they actually, you know, maybe have bought over in London. That's a very typical thing. Yeah, it could also be when you have these jolts to the downside in price, it could also be market maker activity. You know, they're working in order for, you know, a big hedge fund or a big money manager that's trying to build a position. Yeah, you see this, you know, we call it kind of shaking the tree, where market makers will come in to try and help their clients to get a good price. You know, maybe sell into the market, run stops, whatever it may be, and then they may come in and then swoop up shares or swoop up ounces for that matter. So there's a lot of, but that's something that's gone on since, you know, the beginning of publicly traded markets. It, you know, you're, you know, the sell side, or the market, Wall Street guys, they get paid for order flow, and so that's one of the that's their job.
So that's something that might drive the price down in short increments, short term, so that the big guys can get a better price for their trade today. But it's not something that's going to long term be able to hold the price of the commodity lower over years and years, right?
Yeah, it's more just really short-term action. Because if you look at this year, for example, you saw a period in the spring where you saw a lot of that selling off at 8 o'clock, 8 to 10 New York time, and then that was happening when silver was in the 20s and early 30s, even mid 30s. Price is above 40 now, so you can't say that that manipulation has permanently impacted the price movement of silver. It's just, that's why I say a lot of this stuff could be market making activities to work order flow in order to get clients involved in, that want to take positions. Because you have to remember, this asset class is very, very small compared to a lot of the other financials and technology and energy and that type of thing. So it doesn't take a lot of money to start moving things. And if you're a big fund, a billion-dollar fund, and you're trying to put just $50 or $100 million into this market, you can have somewhat of an impact very quickly.
So I want to draw your attention to this post. This is from your Twitter feed recently, where you're zeroing in on the gold to silver ratio, which is something I've been watching very closely this year. And you're saying silver alert. This was a few days ago on September 6th. Oh no, this was just yesterday, actually, you posted this. Okay, excellent. The gold to silver ratio is on the verge of a breakdown into a new range. The more support is tested, the weaker it becomes. In this case, a lower GSR would show silver outperforming gold. Now, of course, we do have to update this one with today because we've got the Federal Reserve meeting today. And of course, silver did not perform well on this Fed rate cut. And so we did see the gold to silver ratio. It's back up around 87.8 as of the recording of this. But I can see what you were talking about here, right? You drew your line was somewhere around the 86 level here, where we've now tested this a couple of times. And I would also point out, I pointed out on my channel a few times, we had a death cross, the 50-day moving average moved below the 200. We've had a couple of tests of the 50-day moving average that have all been rejected. So it does look like the gold to silver ratio wants to move lower here after spending this time, at these obscenely high levels in the hundreds here, which it never stays there very long. Do you still see silver outperforming gold in the short term?
Yes, short term is relative, I guess. I think silver still has momentum behind it. People are looking at these charts, and they see gold sitting 3,600 plus new all-time highs, and they're seeing silver saying, "Hey, listen, this thing hit 50 in 1980 or 50 in 2011, and this thing still isn't at an all-time high." So that can gravitate and pull money into that specific product or specific metal. It doesn't necessarily just have to be gold has to go up for silver to go up. So you could get this broadening effect, and that's what we've been kind of seeing this year. Just like you mentioned in April, when we were at 100 plus to one on the gold silver ratio, silver has been outperforming since then. And it's just been this recognition, I think, as money's been flowing into mining stocks and platinum has been growing and going up. It's just this broadening effect that you typically see as the metal markets mature and more capital flows into the sector.
Okay, so we got to do this one. I got to zoom way out on my silver chart here. Let's play hypothetical, shall we? Because this is fun. We're in the 40s. I've been waiting for this for years. Now we're here. Let's play. We're coming up on 50 bucks, right? We're still a long ways from 50, but from a technical perspective, there's not a lot of support and resistance between here and 50. So let's assume we're going there. Let's say a few months from now, we actually touch 50, and everybody gets to talk about this wonderful, beautiful cup and handle pattern going back, what is this? Pretty much my whole life, 45 years. 1980, during the Hunt brothers, We touch $50, we get rejected. 2011, you know, post GFC, worries about quantitative easing. We touch $50 again, we get rejected hard. So let's say hypothetically, we go back to 50. We complete this pattern. What are some of the scenarios you could see playing out? Now, I'm not going to hold you to this, all right? I mean, if it plays out a different way, I'm not going to come back and dunk on you or anything. But, you know, for the sake of argument, are we just going to blow through 50 here and onward and upward to $1,000 an ounce? Is this it? Is this the culmination of our life's patience, or is it going to be more complicated than that?
This is the party of the Red Sea, for silver investors, I guess. I think what would probably or most likely is going to happen is you're going to have this, you know, this grind or build up. You may get a little bit of profit taking ahead of, you know, the 48 area, whatever it may be, in front of that. And then I think at some point, which is traditional silver, is that it's going to have a very strong pop or move that just, it's like, you know, hot knife cutting through butter. And just kind of like what you see right there, you know, in 1980, it just went vertical. You know, again, in 2011, that move basically culminated, I think, went from 35 to 50 in a matter of, it was like a week or two. That's just typically how silver works. So you could see very similar effects where all of a sudden this thing goes right through 50. You know, if the shorts aren't positioned correctly, or if producers or mines are hedged improperly, they could get blown out of their hedges and forced to buy back those short positions. Now, you have to remember the setup for this, and I talked about this back in 2024 in different podcasts and so forth, is when I talked about the mother of all short squeezes, typically what you have to look at is the short squeeze happens more than likely in the futures markets, in the derivative markets. That's what pushed the price up in 1980. That's what pushed the price up in 2011. 2011 was the contract rule, the May contract rule. What I'm saying here is that, yes, there's 200 million ounces of metal in the registered category or silver in the registered category. There's 500 million ounces in both the eligible and the registered category. And everyone say, well, God, if there's that much metal, how can there be any type of shortage? Well, there isn't a shortage. The issue is that metal, a lot of it has already been sold via the futures contracts. And if you look at the main contract right now, which is December, the roll has already taken place with silver. We were in September silver. You know, in August, you start to blow out of your September contracts, you buy those back, and then you start to sell the December contract against maybe your physical position. And that time value of money difference between September and December is where you make that arbitrage profit. And so what happens is the metal is essentially locked up unless the short buys back that contract and closes that short leg of against their underlying long position, and then if they do that, then the underlying they can let go or sell whatever they want to do there. But the problem is this metal cannot really move until, like, for example, the registered category can't really move until December, because, you know, some of the months before December are not very liquid contract months. Yes, you can go in and buy an October contract or a November contract, or I should say you could short that and then buy your December contract back. And then it's the short that actually then can deliver that metal to the COMEX or to the clearing firms and cash out. But that's where the rub is that the you know, when you're dealing with December, you can't exercise delivery until you get to that delivery month. And that's where we're sort of stuck in this almost what they call it when you're between heaven and hell,
purgatory.
Purgatory, yeah, sorry. So you're stuck in this purgatory where you have a lot of metal out there, but it's not obtainable as easy as one would think, and that's where these pricing dislocations have kind of appeared from.
So when that roll happens, which I don't know when the September to December contract roll happens, is that when these vertical moves abruptly halt and reverse, or is that Is that what causes the vertical move, that contract roll?
Sometimes it'll have that push higher in price. It depends on, you know, the structure, you know, who's more short or more long at the time. Because if you're, you know, yes, if for every short, there's a long. We know that just from basic accounting. The problem is from a price perspective, who's under more pressure to get out or to take profit? And so in this situation, if you're short and the price is rising, and then all of a sudden you get this EFP or exchange for physical spread that's actually starting to accelerate on the futures leg, then all of a sudden the pressure becomes on the short to try to exit that position. And they're doing it in such a way that, and if you look at open interest, for example, on silver, open interest has been actually fairly quiet. It hasn't been rising like gold's been rising. So you don't have a lot of managed money or a lot of weak longs that would be normally sellers as prices go higher that provides liquidity for the short to get out. You don't have that. So you have this sort of perfect scenario or perfect wave that's forming here in this market that could actually start, if it starts to develop, could put a lot of pressure on the short side of the market. And that's why, yeah, looking at this stuff, it's what I do every day is I try to examine, you know, the skew and all these types of things with options and so forth and the pricing and how things are associated with each other to try and give me sort of a breadcrumb trail of where this market is sort of heading. Now again, you know, you have these one day events where, you know, a world leader says something and throws everything into a frenzy. But yeah, you know, but for the most part, when you start looking into this type of stuff and you look at the industry, you can get sort of a sense where the pressure is going to be.
So no weak longs based on the commitment of traders data that you watch. Would it be fair for me to look at those 5% silver lease rates and those 1.5% borrowing costs for SLV shares and say there are some maybe weak shorthands in the market at this point, though?
Yeah, you could say it's that cost of carry, which is rising, is making it more expensive to get involved with silver. So naturally, what happens is the price has to maybe be reflective of the risk that you're taking. So if you're trying to, for example, it gets a little complicated, but if you're trying to come into the market, and let's just say you're holding a lot of physical inventory expecting this big move, and you get this sort of swoon down in price, all of a sudden with the carrying costs, it can make it extremely expensive and improbable for you to make any money at it. So it's very difficult for players just to play one secular side of the market. And that's why this manipulation argument, people just don't understand how the industry actually operates, where they're using two legs of a strategy. And what their focus is not necessarily the secular move itself, but the spread between the two trades itself. That's what most of the banks and firms actually focus on.
Right. They're making their money on the fees, not the underlying commodity price movement and the spreads, the bid ask and the time decay. Let's touch a little bit on the mining stocks then, because we were talking a little bit about miners before we hit record. And I always do this. We blow through the best content when I'm not recording. Talk to me about miners, because they kind of sat out the run in 2024 to a certain extent, but now they've been ripping in 2025. Some people are out there saying the miners are still underperforming. The few mining names that I own have done very well this year. I've actually started trimming some of my positions in those names. I'm not cashing out wholesale. What do you see going on in the mining space?
Yeah, the miners, you know, and I've always reflected on the miners as more of a trade versus a store of value. You know, one of the reasons in the fund that I manage, it's physical gold and silver, is that you don't have the nuances of the management of the company, the capital markets, the financing, share dilution, you know, all those types of things that could impact a mining company. You know, you're just playing sort of that macroeconomic sort of scenario: is the dollar going up or down, or is, you know, the government being able to finance itself? You know, the friction of all this money printing and so forth. Yeah, the metals tend to be a lot easier trade than the miners. Now, with the mining stocks running like they are, they've had a fabulous year. You have to look at sort of the production costs and their profit margins to get a sense of, okay, how profitable are they right now? Because, a mining company stock is going to be based on its profit margins and profitability and cash flow and all those types of things. What you've had here in this year with the mining companies is sort of a Goldilocks event where oil prices are low. You haven't seen, this rampant inflation with a lot of commodities. It's been somewhat sanguine with really the precious metals for the most part. And so if you start to see other input costs start to flow into the mining companies' operations, like oil, energy is a huge input cost. If the price of energy goes up 50% from here, and even gold goes up a little bit more, the problem is their profit margin is going to start declining. And that decline in profit margin could actually become a negative, even if the price of gold continues to rise. And that's something that people definitely want to be aware of when they're evaluating mining companies or they're in the mining companies, is that these are the types of events that have these outlier effects that could be problematic. And that could be also oil prices going up could actually be a negative for the general stock market too. So these are all things that are just influences that can impact your investment.
Now, I was doing my Patreon Zoom call last Friday that we do every week, and one of my Patreon supporters asked a question about platinum, which is not something I typically track very closely. I know platinum is very heavily influenced by the auto industry, but I told him, I had just scheduled this interview with you when he asked that question, so I promised him I would ask you about platinum. And I want to share my screen again here because I had you on the channel back in May. And you just made it just a monster call on platinum. It was on May 13th, and I zeroed it in right there. That's when you came in and you said, hey, based on historical data, the positioning of the traders, and I think you even called out the gold to platinum ratio, which is something I've never heard anybody point to before. You said, I think platinum is set to rip here. And 2 days later, look at it go. So just phenomenal call on platinum. Now we're just off the highs here. But we're still kind of like walking right up that 50-day moving average right now, sitting around 1300 bucks. Are you as bullish platinum now as you were back in May, or has that trade run its course?
You have to remember with me, when I'm dealing with physical metals, like in the fund, that it's longer term. So unlike trading options or short-term trading, what I look at it is, platinum is a big story, I think, later this decade. And that's, you look at mining supply and supply deficits in platinum and then the above ground stocks, just like you look at silver, very similar in silver. But with platinum, the problems with the mining industry, especially in South Africa, that they've been having, a lot of that above ground stock will be worked off by 2027, 2028. And then there you have a serious issue with platinum, especially if it gets motivated to be used in, for example, hydrogen, for example, that starts to broaden its use capabilities. That's a huge positive going forward. And that's something that that's what I'm looking for. It's nice to get some of these short-term trades perfect, and you're going to get a lot of volatility. Platinum's a very small market, but interesting enough, last week the managed money crowd actually increased their shorts quite a bit in platinum, and platinum actually rose into that. So there's a lot of players that are trying to bet against it at the moment. And maybe they're looking for maybe a general market correction, maybe an economic slowdown, whatever it may be. But with the Fed now lowering rates into an environment that potentially could be inflationary, I think there's sort of the wind to our backs with the metals, over the next year or two. Again, that's what I try to look at. It's nice to get these short-term movements absolutely nailed down, but you may see a drop in platinum where it pulls back 100 bucks, and then it may pop 200 Because, for example, the price of gold isn't collapsing or coming down. And all of a sudden, you're starting to see maybe more interest from Asia for use of platinum and jewelry because gold is so high in price. Those types of dynamics, it's hard to gauge from moment to moment. You try to look at it more from a quarter to quarter type of scenario, because it's these dynamics change so fast. I mean, it's just a geopolitical trade talks and so forth. These things have they wash a lot of people out before the move develops.
Well, Bob, I got to say, I'm digging the modesty there. All right. I like the cut of your jib. That being said, a call like that, it's all right to dunk every now and then. So sure. I think you nailed that one. You deserve the credit for it. So I'll give it to you, even if you don't want to take it. I want to nail down a little bit more some of the things you said. You mentioned the later this decade. You hinted at some, I don't know, was it geopolitical risk or was it more like worries about the infrastructure in South Africa that made you zero in on the mines there? I know that's the big mining hub, obviously, for platinum. Most of the world's platinum supply comes from there. But is it like a BRICS thing that has you worried about this decade, or just the decrepit state of the power grid in South Africa disrupting production?
Yeah, it's more of the mining issues down in South Africa. You have to remember, with Russia, a lot of that platinum that they produce actually goes to China. So South Africa is really the rest of the world's sort of inventory. And that's where... again, you had electric vehicles kind of put a damper on platinum for quite a long time, especially after the Volkswagen diesel fiasco, where they were rigging the emissions numbers, and diesel never really took. After that happened, diesel really never became viable in sort of consumer cars. And so those types of things, which played out, for a platinum investor, if you thought it's been painful being a silver investor, a platinum investor, it's been like a nightmare. Because the price had gone absolutely nowhere for 15 years. And so I think, that low price obviously has an impact on, the mineability of platinum and sort of the incentive to actually go out and build more mines and so forth. So all those types of things start to develop a the cure for low prices is low prices, and that's what you try to look for when you're trying to look at markets in relative values to other assets, and then also relative value relative to its production costs and so forth. Most of the platinum miners are losing money mining platinum, so it just was a matter of time before the right event came along and the market woke up and said, well, now this is cheap. And that's kind of what took place with gold rising. Gold pulled up a lot of the white metals and brought a lot of attention to the sector. And I think that's what, that's typically what happens is, the smaller markets, the baton gets handed off to the smaller, more speculative market, near the, when you get into that sort of blow off phase wave five, whatever you want to call it. But that's what you try to watch for.
And then you also zeroed in on 2027 and 2028. You mentioned much of the above ground stock will be exhausted. I'm guessing then that platinum has been operating at some kind of a big deficit for the last several years. Then again, I don't track this market as close as some of the other metals.
Yeah, the deficit on platinum has been much more pronounced, but again, just like with the silver market, you have above ground stocks, and those above ground stocks will be worked off. Just like when you think of above ground stocks, think of the metal that's at the COMEX or at the LBMA, for example. That metal has been declining over time at the LBMA. It's being used to match the surge in demand. So and you have that. That's part of how this market breathes. As the market sees more demand influx coming in, the supply that's sitting at the exchange or at the LBMA, for example, will be let go and meet that demand. It's just a matter of the price.
And so, if we really are on pace to, say, by 2027, exhaust all of our above ground platinum stocks, that means we need more platinum to appear. How do you make more platinum appear? Higher prices. It just magically comes out of the ground or disappears from your catalytic converter overnight while you were sleeping in the driveway.
Yes, I was just about to say scrap would be, one way that, the industry sees a lot of, material coming back. Or you may see, a meltdown of jewelry. A lot of people with gold, for example, right now are melting their jewelry down and just collecting the cash, which is very typical when you see, prices rise on a particular, commodity.
So we've been going for a while here, and I usually like to wrap up the show with just kind of an open-ended question. Anything that you see playing out in the precious metals market or the economy as a whole that you're paying attention to or you're watching that maybe we didn't touch on today?
I think the biggest thing right now is just trying to follow the political developments with the administration, the trade wars, the on and off again with especially if you're looking at the metals, the on and off again questions, not necessarily on gold, because gold now has been pretty much solidified that they're not gonna have tariffs on it. But silver and platinum are still ones that are sort of being looked at. And we probably are, I think it's October or November, we're supposed to get some sort of resolve via, was it section or chapter 232, I think, or one of those things where the customs has this process that they follow to go through and determine the whether or not an asset or a category is going to be tariffed or not. So we'll get more clarification on that. But yeah, these are the things that you watch for it. I mean, who knows? I mean, the solid state batteries that we all sort of read about last year as potentially a new demand for silver, maybe getting closer and closer to some viability there. You may be seeing players that are actually buying silver right now. It may not be the photo sell market. It may be buyers that are actually going to use silver and solid state batteries, and they're accumulating silver right now. So you just don't know some of these things. I wish we had, we were flying along some of these trading desks, but these are the things you try to account for when you're managing money and you're trying to manage your positions.
Well, Bob, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, for sharing your wisdom as always. Folks, that's Bob Coleman. He is the CEO of Idaho Armored Vaults. I'm going to put a link to his website down below, as well as a link to his Twitter handle or his X profile at Profits Plus ID, which I have to say for the last 2 years, there has been just some amazing stuff in your Twitter feed. You've had a couple of really good calls. We talked about that one on platinum. You had a monster of a call back in February last year on a short squeeze in silver. So if you're not following Bob on Twitter already, you should be. Link down below. Check that one out. Bob, thanks again for your time and everybody else. Until next time, live small and dream big.